Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. This week we're in Chicago ahead of the rugby weekend. New Zealand Maori play the USA here on Friday night. And that's followed by Ireland against New Zealand on Saturday in Soldier Field. Well, the sense of excitement is incredible after the Chicago Cubs win in the World Series midweek. Later on, we'll be hearing from the Ireland coach Joe Schmidt after today's team announcement. And we'll get a New Zealand perspective from their commentator, Nigel Yalden. But first, let's look back to the highlights when these teams last met at the Aviva Stadium in 2013.
Bottom Murray now, sweeps it back towards Jamie Heaslip. He's brought it within 5 yards of the New Zealand line. Back with Conor Murray, sweeps it towards Peter O'Mahony, the Munster captain. They stopped 2 yards short of the line. Conor Murray for Ireland, Murray for the line, Murray for the touchdown, Murray for the tie, and the far side towards Rory Best. Rory Best off of the line, Rory Best for the tie, across on the far side of the pitch. 10 minutes gone, a second try for Ireland. Rory Best with the try. Now it's knocked on, and there's a chance here now as Kearney comes over the halfway line towards the 10-metre line. It's a race for the goal. Kearney for the 22. Kearney for the corner. Kearney for the try. He sets it down. It was Kearney against Kearney. Swept it back to Cruden, moves it out on the near side towards Dane Coles, get through the cover. New Zealand through Ryan Crotty, getting for the try on the near side of the pitch. Here comes Aaron Cruden now with the conversion chance for New Zealand. 22 points apiece. Cruden with the kick hits this one. It's gone between towards the post, and it has gone between the posts. Aaron Cruden has kicked Ireland to death right in the last minute of this game.
Well, that was the highlights, if I can call it that, of 2013, the last time these two teams met, New Zealand against Ireland at the Aviva Stadium, and certainly know how I felt after that. And I know that the man next to me here, Nigel Yalden, you had a contrasting emotion, but maybe not that emotion that you experienced after the game for the first 79 minutes.
Yeah, what it was for me is the interesting thing, Michael, I don't know if this is the same with you and the job you do as a commentator now. I just want to see a good game of rugby. I'm not actually... doesn't worry me whether the All Blacks win or lose. If I see a good game of rugby and the better team wins, I'm happy with that. And that test at Aviva Stadium was one of the best test matches I've ever seen. It gave you so much in the first 20 minutes, and then the way the All Blacks slowly built in, where that little bit of drama with Sexton missing the penalty, which would have put real heat on the All Blacks, and then that phenomenal movement after the final hooter to get the job done. Then the double take on the conversion as well. It's one of the best test matches I've been in. It's one of the best atmospheres right up until that final hooter. After the final hooter, it was you could feel the air being sucked out of the stadium, as you alluded to before. But as a test match, as a spectacle, it's one of the best ones I've ever seen.
I know that from talking to colleagues in New Zealand, they say that was the one that almost got away.
Yeah, it almost did get away, but it didn't. And that's the thing about this All Black team, and we've seen it time and time again, their ability, particularly in the final 20 minutes of games when other teams seem to get a little tight or tire or don't get the impact they want from their bench, this particular All Black team has the ability to bring players on. And whereas in past you used to see when the reserves came on, sometimes the game would sort of unravel slightly. With this All Black team now, they bring on their reserves and the game lifts. They'll take a Bowden Barrett, slot him back to fullback, and he has a second wind, a second impact on the game by moving him as well. So, that was one that could have got away, but it just showed the mental fortitude of that group, which has now flowed on into this current group, not to ever give up and just keep going right to the final whistle.
Obviously, things have changed and moved on in terms of, there's been a Rugby World Cup, but even this year with the Rugby Championship, and what you're saying, the last 10, 15 minutes of matches where the New Zealand looked in trouble against teams like Argentina, but, when you look at the final score, you go, wow, what just happened there?
Yeah, and the interesting thing is when you look at it, you're right, you say that, it's kind of like, wow, that 35-point victory in Hamilton over Argentina, was that really reflective of the game? And whilst part of you actually says, well, no, it wasn't because Argentina was so competitive, you actually then have to step back and go, well, actually, it is reflective of it because Argentina were competitive for 50 minutes and it's an 80-minute game. We've seen, even you go back to that South African game, South Africa was still in there after an hour. And then that final 20 minutes, the final 10 minutes, they just absolutely blew them off the park in Durban. So, this is a team which just keeps chugging on and keeps finding a way. And there are some people, you could state the case that when you look at the team that won the World Cup last year, perfectly built for a World Cup, but now with those players gone, this team now has been able to unleash ever so slightly. So, you know, they had a great group for that World Cup now. That's a great base to start with, and they've built a wonderful base to build on towards that next Rugby World Cup.
Before we even talk about the team selected for this weekend, I mean, I had a conversation with a mate of mine back in Dublin during the week, and I said it's incredible that we're now talking about New Zealand and New Zealand rugby and where they are. We don't even mention Richie McCaw or Dan Carter.
Oh, we don't. But that, in a way, that's also a compliment.
Absolutely.
To Richie and Dan as well. The fact that they and Ma'a, Conrad, Tony Woodcock, Kevin Mialamu, and it's also a massive compliment as well to Steve Hansen and his selectors and the way they have been able to groom, using Richie and Dan and that leadership group, been able to groom the next wave coming through. Kieran Reid, Sam Keynes, the Aaron Crudens, who are now as Sam Whitelock, part of that senior leadership group. And the fact that they've just been able to flow straight out of that World Cup. And everyone was expecting some kind of a dip, but we haven't seen it. And so that there's just a massive, massive tip of the cap to the way the continuity and the planning and the forethought about how to keep this All Black team, and not saying, look, we're not going to rebuild, we're going to reset. And that's exactly what they've done in 2016.
And when you look at what Steve Hansen has done in the last couple of years, and you see a player, you know, like Bowden Barrett, and I mean, he's going to win cap 46. I mean, I had to take a double take to see 46, and we're talking about a fellow who was sort of in the coattails of somebody else for quite a long period of time.
Yeah, precisely. You look at Julian Sevilla's playing his 50th cap this weekend in Chicago. These young players are just cranking up because they play so much test rugby now. But yeah, I mean, Barrett's just been outstanding. You know, you look at the way he's playing the game, and there was comparisons earlier in the year. They were making comparisons to the man you mentioned before, Daniel Carter, the way he seemed to be playing the game at another level at his pomp. And of course, everyone, from a New Zealand point of view, when we talk first five play, everyone goes back second test, 2005 British and Irish Lions. And that wonderful performance by Daniel Carter. And, you know, there are people saying, gee, what could we expect next year from Bowden Barrett if he keeps producing something similar? So, and again, that comes back to that succession planning and getting these guys in, getting them comfortable, so when those older players do step away, whether it's for retirement or to go overseas, the move is seamless. And as I say, that also flows on to what you see with the likes of the reserves stepping on midst a game.
I know that any time that anybody goes on tour, there's a bit of mixing and matching. There's a specific reason why there is a bit of mixing and matching, say, in the second row this weekend. I mean, one of the eye-catching ball and things that stands out is Jerome Kino now the second row, rather than a loose forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, they've lost three senior lock forwards. They've lost arguably one of the best locking combinations, if not the best locking combination in the world, and Sam Whitelock to an ankle injury. Brodie Retallick, who's undergoing concussion protocols. Sadly, this week, Luke Romano having to head home to New Zealand because of a bereavement in his family. And so there was thought, Scott Barrett, who's had a very good Super Rugby and provincial season in New Zealand, there was thought, okay, he's probably going to be the next guy in. I'm a little surprised, but I'm not. Jerome Kano can play lock. He's had to fulfil that role. He can scrum at lock, no problems at all. There's plenty of line-out options when you look at the All Black team named. Kano's a good line-out option. Patrick Tuipulotu, the specialist lock, is outstanding in that area as well, although he doesn't get credit for it. Liam Squire's a big man who can get up in the air. And then you've got Kieran Reid, who's one of the premier line-out forwards in world rugby. So I thought maybe in the past they've sort of gone, okay, look, if we're going to put some young guy, we're going to pack the experience around them. And when you look at the rest of the All Black pack, you could say even if you had Barrett there with Kano alongside, he's surrounded by a lot of experience and a lot of leadership. But this also makes sense as well because he is just fresh. Scott Barrett's only there as injury cover himself. So it makes sense when you look at it from the way All Black selectors like to go about their things, although kind of out of character, but at the same time not, if you can kind of understand what I'm saying there.
A question about Kieran Reid. I mean, he's certainly taken to the captaincy thing. If anything, it's made him a better player.
Yep, and I think he's a guy who is flourishing under the fact that it's now his team. And that's, again, that's not a knock on Richie McCaw. Richie captained the team his way. Now Kieran's got the opportunity to put his stamp on it. And it's interesting how just recently he did an interview and he was talking about how today is the day he takes over the team. Thursday, he wants full control of the team, whereas it used to be still the coaches had a little bit of influence sort of Friday and sort of then the Saturday the players really owned. He wants full control pretty much from Thursday. He wants to be able to have his voice. And so Friday, the captain's run's all about. And so, again, that's that self-ownership. The ownership of the team then goes from, right, we're ready, we're here to go, the team's been named, now it's us, let's go, let's do it.
In terms of this game, Ireland, New Zealand, you know, here, Chicago, it's a kind of a strange venue in terms of, you know, certainly you know that there's a hell of a lot of tickets being sold by Irish fans. It's a home game for two teams, but it's a long way to travel for a home game.
It is a very, very long, but isn't that cool? I like the theory. I think it would have been cool if that Māori All Blacks game against the USA was maybe played prior to it. I love the idea of a double header on Soldier Field. I'm sure it would be able to stand up to the rigours of that. But I think it's just going to be sensational. I was lucky enough to be here for the USA game 2 years ago, and the atmosphere was going to be great. And, you know, that was a very knowledgeable rugby crowd. And I think we do need to forget there are really good pockets of rugby people around the United States of America. And being in the central part of the United States, you're going to get a lot of people converging on for this game. So I think the crowd's going to be an absolute cracker. I think the game's going to be a really good one as well.
I know you've had the good fortune to chat to a couple of the players ahead of this game.
Yeah, you're right. And lucky enough to catch up the other day with the vice-captain of the All Blacks, fullback Ben Smith.
What's the main lesson that 2013 game taught the All Blacks, who are currently still in the All Blacks, about rugby?
Yeah, I think one of the main things we got is that when you don't get your physicality where it needs to be, other teams are going to rise to the occasion and really bring the physicality, and that puts you under the pump right from the get-go. Like, rugby is, everyone says it's one up front, but it's probably pretty true, and it's on the back of that. It's how the collisions are sort of met, and how you treat those and your attitude to make sure that you're dominating collisions. And I think that was a good example of a few things they did. They really brought the physicality, and that put us under a lot of pressure. On the back of that, I think that they, the way that they used their kicking game was really smart, so we needed to adjust, and we were slow to do that. And yeah, I think when they do employ a good kicking game, you've got to really react and find ways around manipulating that so it works in your favour. So we've talked about a bit of all those things and how we counteract that this weekend.
You talk about the physicality. Was it something maybe the team was a little guilty of last time out against Australia, particularly that great opening 10 minutes? Do you feel that was an area where the Australians were able to dominate you, you know, through the rest of the first half, maybe early doors in the second as well?
Yeah, I think they maybe they just got a wee bit of an edge there, and physicality can probably come from a few different ways, and I think we might have been a bit late to position, which also means that you're not making quality tackles, or your attacks maybe a wee bit behind as far as positioning goes, and there's a few different things like that. So I think that there's a few of those lessons learnt, and we've talked about a few more to make sure that that doesn't happen on Saturday.
Spoken a little bit about the dimensions of Soldier Field. Length, no worries. Width, yeah. Narrow. Yeah. How does that change things for you as a fullback? How does that change things both defensively and offensively?
Without giving away too much, you want to make sure that with a smaller ground that you're using it to your advantage, and that I think with the way we want to use the back three, we want to work really hard, and we've got a few ways of really embracing if it's a longer normal field, or if it's a smaller field, just making sure that we're working hard to try and help that front line do their job.
If it means that the ball stays in hand more,
yep,
that would suit the All Blacks quite nicely, wouldn't it?
Well, that's obviously one way we like to impact on a game as a back three, and as a team, you know, we enjoy it when the ball's in play, and I think everyone does. I think every rugby team enjoys it that way, and people watching like to see rugby being played, and I think, hopefully if there's opportunities there, that we'll look to really embrace that and look for the opportunity.
Final question, nothing to do with rugby.
Yeah.
How cool is it to be in Chicago the day that the Chicago Cubs break this 108-year drought of the World Series?
Yeah, so I arrived here. To be fair, I'd normally flick on baseball back home and I'd flick it onto another channel. And I got here this week and I thought, oh, I've got to get into this with the World Series. So I watched the first game. I think it was on Friday night. And I think they lost the first one when we arrived. And then just watching and sort of picking up from other people how the game works and the dynamics of different things, I've really enjoyed watching, and I've found it hard to take my eyes off the game. And the Chicago is a place that's going nuts, and it's great to be here this week that there's so much energy from their fans and people really enjoying the game. So I've really enjoyed watching.
So what do you reckon?
Cubs fan.
Seven game Super Rugby final series, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if the players would enjoy that, but the fans might.
I've just popped along to Ireland rugby training. The team training behind me here in Chicago. I'm at training where I bumped into an old friend of mine, Gavin Hickey. What? You've got a USA rugby top on you. What are you doing here?
Well, it's good to see you, Michael. I was fortunate enough to get in touch with the management, the Irish management, and ask if I could tag along and view some very, very high-performance training. And the boys looked after me, and here we are. So it's wonderful to see the Irish in America.
And it's wonderful to see you here because you've been here for quite a long time.
Well, I have, yeah. I left Leicester Tigers in 2008 and came over to the States with the idea of playing for 3 months and heading back and getting another contract in Europe. And 8 years later, here we are. So this is home now, and it's a wonderful, wonderful place to be.
And where's the conveyor belt that is international rugby? Where has it brought you now? What are you doing? What are you up to?
Well, I'm head coach at Dartmouth College over in New Hampshire, in Hanover, and I'm also head coach of the Collegiate All-Americans, which is confusing for non-Americans. It's effectively USA under-23s. Mm-hmm. We toured Australia last year. We had 3 games down there. We got pipped in 2 of them, unfortunately, by 3 or 4 points, and we won the other game. So, like rugby itself here, we've got a lot of young, ambitious coaches like myself as well who want to be involved with high-performance rugby, want to be involved in national team rugby, and on that perspective, things are going pretty well.
And there's a kind of an Irish brotherhood, isn't there? Because I know Greg McWilliams and Justin Fitzpatrick, I haven't seen him for donkey's years, but I know that they're in the country somewhere.
There's lots of them. I work very closely with Greg, both in the Ivy League and with Collegiate All-Americans. Justin's obviously doing very well over in Seattle Saracens. And, of course, there's Ray Egan as well from the Munster Academy, who I worked with before over in California. So, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's lots of us around the place.
And tell me, I know that there was a professional league started here within the last 12 months. I mean, how has that gone? I mean, how is it run in what is an absolutely massive country?
Well, I mean, that's the biggest challenge for rugby in this country is just geography. I mean, even to get one domestic national camp, you're talking about spending $100,000+ simply just to get everybody in one place. So that's a big challenge. The Pro League, it's had its first season. It was good. It was small, a small league of 5 teams. Everybody played each other twice. It's going the right direction. Whether or not this is the final model as to what it's going to look like in 3 or 4 years, I think that's up for debate. But we're taking the first steps towards getting to where we want to get to.
And how is it, or how difficult or otherwise is it to get people involved in the game? I mean, I saw it firsthand here in Chicago. You know, the Cubs and their knock-on effect. I mean, you know, we're all Cubs fans today, but rugby, it seems to be way down the food chain.
Well, it is. But there's a number of factors that are hopefully going to change that. One of them, I think, unfortunately, is concussion in football is a huge deal here. And I think that, the numbers playing American football now are dropping significantly. And hopefully that lends itself to rugby. Concussions and rugby aren't mutually exclusive either. So, we'll see how that one develops. But, sevens is a big deal here. And it's a very big vehicle for getting guys involved in rugby. As obviously, as a spectator sport, it's easier to understand as opposed to the intricate details of 15s. Rugby is slowly but surely, raising its head here, and it's said to be the fastest growing team sport here in the United States.
And how important is it for the profile of the game in terms of creating awareness and everything that you see, international teams like, obviously, we're all looking at this with green tinted glasses. I mean, Ireland are here, the All Blacks are here, the Maori are here, USA are playing a game as well later on this evening.
This weekend is massive. It's a massive event in the American rugby calendar. USA played against the All Blacks here in Soldier Field 2 years ago, and it was a wonderful, wonderful occasion. But to be fair, wasn't very competitive. To come back here 2 years later and to have Ireland playing against New Zealand here in the same place, I think it shows you the ambition that the country has in terms of staging top-level international games and being involved in top-level international games. So, you know, these are all just little footsteps in the right direction.
And in terms of yourself, your privilege to get back to the training session, which is about to start over my shoulder here, from a coaching point of view, I mean, you're obviously, you know, you've left home, you know, years ago, you've got your foot in the ladder here. I mean, where's this going to take you? Are you going to come back to Ireland? Do you have that ambition or what's the story?
I don't see myself settling in Ireland anytime soon. Again, this is home. I love it here, and I'm very ambitious within USA Rugby. Having said that, I'm very ambitious. I want to see how far I can take this in terms of professional, hopefully national team coaching. I'm passionate about coaching now, and, you know, it's my life. And, you know, we'll wait and see. I just got to keep my head down, keep working away, and we'll see what opportunities present themselves worldwide.
And it's certainly a long way from the days of the Ulster Bank League, playing in front of passionate people in Dublin and places like that.
That's where it all started, though. That's still, you know, that's still in my heart. That's still home. I mean, there's... to have won that inaugural Celtic League in 2012, not in 2012, in 2001 with Leinster still.
Longer.
Yeah, exactly, right? I'm showing my age now. But, you know, all those things kind of had to go before to help me to be where I am today. And really, I couldn't be happier with the career I've had playing-wise and, you know, the fledgling coaching career that I'm really, really excited about.
So we're back from Ireland training, where we had that conversation with Gavin Hickey out at training. We're back in the team hotel, and the side to play New Zealand has been named, and the man who named that team is alongside me here, Joe Schmidt. A big opportunity on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity for us to get a bit of a reference point in the lead into the Guinness series back at home, and also to get a bit of a reference point around some individuals who are potentially going to get their first opportunity and others returning into the team to get an opportunity to put their best foot forward.
It's a good chance, isn't it, to measure yourself when you take on the best team in the world. They're there for a reason, and it's a benchmark.
I think the reasons are fairly numerous as well. I think they can play whatever, in whatever fashion they desire. They're incredibly good putting ball in behind you. They are incredibly accomplished skill-wise and then incredibly brutal when they bring the real physical side of the game. So, you know, no matter which way they decide to attack you, it's pretty difficult to shut down. So it's going to be a real challenge for us to do that. And on the other side of the coin, their defensive line speed and how physical they've been in the tackle is one thing I think they've ramped up since the World Cup. And that, again, will make life pretty difficult for us on Saturday.
Now, we've all seen teams that go toe-to-toe with them for 60, 70 minutes, and then all of a sudden, when you look at the final score at 80 minutes, you wonder, how the hell is there that much of a discrepancy in that final scoreboard?
Yeah, and the thing is that 10 minutes can come at any time. You know, you look at the three test matches against Wales, you know, the first two test matches, there was nothing in it at halftime, really, and then they got away in the final quarter, although just scoring after half time on one of them, and then in the third test they blew them out of the water in the first half. They blew the Wallabies away in the first half of the first game of the Rugby Championship, whereas in the final game a couple of weeks ago, I think it was about 15-10 at half time, and really the Australians were right in the game and even had the opportunity to potentially go in front, but got pulled back for an obstruction that was probably a pretty harsh call against them. Otherwise, they would have gone 17-15 ahead after 45 minutes. But, you know, you look at the end score of that game of 37-10 and you wonder how they managed to accumulate those points in such a short space of time with very much a smaller proportion of possession and territory.
When you look at the Ireland starting team, the Ireland 23, it's probably fair to say it's the most... you've gone for the most experienced people out of the players that are available to you this week.
Yeah, to start anyway. You know, we've got some real inexperience on the bench going through it. You know, guys like Finlay Beelam is a guy who's really just kind of starting with us. Alton Dallan is just starting with us, and Josh van der Vleer's got two caps. So, you know, anything outside the front row is still pretty young with us. Same, you know, Kieran Marmion said, very little time with us. Match time, that is. He certainly spent a bit of time with us, which hopefully gives him a little bit of confidence when he comes on, and obviously the two debutants, potential debutants, in Joey Carberry and Gary Ringrose, have, you know, that's going to be a massive task for them.
It's one you're looking forward to. It's, I mean, it has to be an exciting chance for everybody.
Yeah, I think the players are really looking forward to it, and I think the whole arena, the whole occasion is something that people will really enjoy. But for us, as I said, I think it's going to be a really important reference point. We're going to find out where we're at and where we need to build, because every time we get together, the group is slightly different. You know, we went to South Africa without a number of key players. A number of those key players are still missing, the likes of Peter O'Mahony and Sean O'Brien, who, you know, in the last game against the All Blacks were absolutely outstanding. Ian Henderson, who was so influential in South Africa, isn't with us after just having a shoulder injury that's not too bad, but just didn't quite come right in time. And, you know, we've got a few new faces in as well. Guys also like Jonathan Sexton and Simon Zeebo, who didn't tour South Africa through injury. Getting those players back in and comfortable on the back of training Monday morning and this morning, you know, hopefully we can show some signs of cohesion that will hopefully grow over the next 3 weeks.
And just before we finish up, I gather that I know that the size of the Irish fan base of the Cubs has gone through the roof in the last 24 hours.
I have been stunned by how many of the lads have bought Cubs merchandise. I think, we're certainly helping kick on the Chicago economy. It was quite astonishing watching the game last night, though, just because you're almost, because of the whole history, the 1908 last time having won it, and the desperation to win it, and then having no chance, almost being 3-1 down and having to play the remaining games in Cleveland and getting the result. I just think a lot of the players, they're sports nuts anyway, and so they love a good underdog story, and what better way to experience an underdog story than be in the city itself when it happens. And I think tomorrow's going to be a little bit special with the parade at midday. That there's word here that potentially they might turn the river blue. Now I know they turn it green on Paddy's Day, St Patrick's Day here, so potentially they may well do that. But they're talking about maybe two million plus being involved in the parade, so it will make moving around the city somewhat difficult. So we've been pushed, I think, very, very early in our captain's run. So people will be getting straight out of bed onto the coach and off to the captain's run. So hopefully that goes smoothly and we can get back to the hotel before the parade kicks off at midday.
Well, thanks indeed for joining us, Joe. That's Joe Schmidt there, the Ireland rugby coach, ahead of the game against New Zealand this coming weekend. It promises to be a rather exciting 48 hours ahead here in Chicago. From everybody from The Breakdown, thanks for downloading and thanks for listening.